seduce. They feed off them through touch, leeching their beauty through the open sores in their hands until they've stolen all there is to steal, leaving their prey as hideous as they are. They didn't kill their victims but left them alive to suffer, and sometimes returned to visit them, drawing some sick sustenance from their horror and misery. I'd watched the gray man feed twice. He'd been especially terrifying to me because for years I'd shamelessly used my looks to my advantage, flirting for better tips, batting my eyelashes at a traffic cop, feigning sultry blonde stupidity to get my way. Before I'd come to Dublin, I thought my looks were pretty much the only power I had, and losing them would have made me feel worthless. Baron says the victims inevitably commit suicide, I told her, because they can't face living, looking like they do.
We'll bag the bitch,
Danny said coolly. I smiled, but it faded quickly. We'd arrived at our destination, and I stared, spirit sinking. I wanted answers, and I'd been counting heavily on getting some here. But 939 Revelmoel was a complete disappointment. A few months ago, Chester's elegant granite, marble, and polished wood facade would have drawn the upper crust of the city's bored, rich, and jaded beautiful. But, like the rest of Dublin, it had been brought to its knees on Halloween, and the once sophisticated three-story building was a wreck. Stained glass windows crunched beneath our boots as we skirted riot debris. Marble entry pillows were deeply scored by gash marks that looked as if they'd been made by something with talons of steel. Lavish French-style gas lamps had been ripped from the sidewalk and tossed in a twisted pile, blocking the club's entrance as if whatever unseelie was responsible had held some special hatred for the place. The club sign dangled by cables in front of the pile. It had been smashed to bits. The front and sides of the building were heavily covered with graffiti. Between the lamps and the club sign, there was no getting into the building through the front door. And no reason to. Chester's was as deserted as the rest of the city. I punched my palm with a gloved fist. I was sick of dead ends and non-answers.
"Let's go hunt the gray woman. She's got to be around here somewhere," I growled.
"Why?"
Danny looked at me blankly. "Because I'm frustrated and pissed off, that's why."
"But I ain't ever been in a club," she protested. "I even dressed for it."
"That isn't a club, Danny. It's a destroyed building."
"There's all kinds of stuff happening here."
"Like what? Shades having a party inside all that rubble?" She laughed.
Oh, man, I forgot you're deaf. You can't hear the music. It's got a cool beat, different from most I've heard. I've been listening to it for blocks now. Down, Mac. We gotta go down."
Danny was right. The music was different. But as I would soon find out, it wasn't the only thing different about Chester's. In fact, nothing was normal. The club would shift all my paradigms and slam home the many changes the world had gone through while I'd been otherwise occupied. The entrance to the club was now around back, an inconspicuous battered metal door in the ground that looked like a forgotten cellar entry. If Danny hadn't been able to hear the music, I would have walked right past the place and never suspected a thing. The door creaked as it opened on a narrow black maw. I sighed. I hate being underground, but somehow I keep ending up there. I unhooked the Michaelo from my pack, punched on all the lights, and strapped it on my head. Danny did the same, and we descended the ladder in a blaze of light, opened a second trapdoor, and descended a second ladder. We found ourselves in the middle of an industrial foyer of sorts, tastefully decorated in the height of urban chic, facing tall double doors. I still couldn't hear any music. The doors had to be seriously thick. I flexed the she-seer place in my head, wishing I had some idea what to expect, but the channel was still full of static, just louder. Danny slanted me a narrow-eyed look.
"Don't you kind of think there'd be guards or something?"
I think making it through the Dublin night alive and figuring out where this place is might be all the guards it needs, I said dryly. I shoved at the door. It didn't budge. That, and getting the door open. I slipped off my Michaelo and strapped it, still blazing, onto my pack. I tousled my hair to get rid of hat head. Danny joined me, and together we shoved open the door and got our first look at Chester's. I love you so much, you must kill me now. The music was so loud, the bass vibrated my bones. They were playing Marilyn Manson's If I Was Your Vampire, but it had been re-recorded to a completely different beat. A little dreamier, a little darker, a thing I wouldn't have thought possible. I stood in the doorway and stared. Here was the new Temple Bar gone underground. Chester's. Slick. Chic. The height of urban sophistication married to industrial muscle. Chrome and glass, black and white. Coolly erotic. Basely sexual. Manhattan posh wed to Irish mob. Everything's black, no turning back. The place was huge. The tables packed. The tiered dance floors were crammed with hot bodies. It was standing room only. I was astonished to see that so many humans had survived and were still in Dublin, partying at that. Under other circumstances, it might have been a pleasant surprise. These so weren't other circumstances. Danny grabbed my arm. It would bruise.
Unfucking real,
she breathed. I nodded. I'm a she-seer. To me, things are simple. There are two races, human and fae. I work with Valaine because I have to in order to save my people. I'll work with the Queen of the Fae for the same reason. But it's programmed into my genes, coded into my blood, that these two races were always intended to live separately, and it's my job to keep things that way. Chester's was a she-seer's nightmare. It was crammed with Fae and humans, mingling. No, it was worse than that. They were socializing. Oh, who was I kidding? Young, attractive humans by the dozens were flirting outrageously with Unseelie. On one of the dance floors, half a dozen girls were licking a rhino boy's sharp, yellowed tusks with pretty pink tongues. His beady eyes gleamed. He was grunting like a pig and stamping a hoof. On another dance floor, a blonde had pulled up her shirt and was rubbing her bare breasts against a tall, dark, faceless fae, while two other women tried to push her away so they could have their turn. In a booth, a shirtless male waiter, showcasing his chiseled abs with heavily oiled skin, was caressing the, udders of a thing I'd never seen before and hoped I wouldn't again. Beside me, Danny stiffened.
Ew! Just ew! That's disgusting!
She made a gagging noise in the back of her throat, then snickered.
Sure gives a whole new meaning to the phrase, I gave her the finger, don't it?
What? Where? She pointed. A woman was sucking erotically on the tip of a rhino boy's stumpy finger, which he'd given to her by cutting it off his hand. I inhaled sharply, as the reality of what was going on here smacked me between the eyes. Humans weren't just cozying up to the newest exotic big bad because it was something different and exciting. As Danny had feared, Unseelie were the new vamps. My generation has an incurable, bottomless obsession with the undead. The heavily romanticized version, of course, the defanged fang-banger, not the real deal, which is really dead and really kills you. As I watched, the woman bit down hard and began chewing with an expression of near religious ecstasy. These humans were eating Unseelie, not to fight them off and reclaim our world, but for the rush of it. Unseelie flesh, the new drug. They're trading sex for the high, I said flatly.
Looks like, Danny said. Let's just hope those skanks can't get knocked up.
The thought was too awful to contemplate. A young goth girl with feverishly bright eyes approached.
You better hurry. The song's almost over.
So, Danny said. Goth Girl looked her up and down.
Not a bad idea. Gangly and Awkward might just intrigue. They like experimenting.
I didn't have to look at Danny to know her hand had gone inside her long coat to her sword. Easy, Danny, I said softly. You're not. But the girl was already going on, vapidly intense.
You two must be new. They play it once a night, and while it's playing, you could try to persuade one of them to choose you. Otherwise, you aren't allowed to approach them. Competition's fierce. It can take weeks to get one to notice you.
Choose you for what? I encouraged.
Where have you been all this time? To make you immortal like them. If you eat enough sanctified flesh, you become immortal too. Then you get to go to fairy with them.
I narrowed my eyes. Did eating Unseelie really change you? Or were the dark fae capitalizing on a lie? I was inclined to believe the latter. Malooch had eaten it constantly, long-term, and had never become immortal. How much is enough? I fished. She shrugged.
I don't know. Nobody knows yet. It keeps wearing off, but we will. I've had it 4 times. It's incredible. And the sex! OMG! See you in fairy!
She chirped brightly and dashed off. And I didn't have to hear anyone else say it, although I would hear it so many times over the next few months that I'd want to kill somebody, to realize I'd just heard one of the many strange new buzz phrases in this strange new world.
This is worse than an IFP, Danny muttered. I feel like I'm stuck in an IFCF.
I raised a brow.
Interdimensional fairy clusterfuck, she said sourly. Don't they see what's happening? Don't they know the Unseelie are destroying our world? Don't they see we're gonna die out if we don't stop them?
Apparently they didn't care. I needed a drink, badly. Pushing through the crowd, I headed for the bar. Chapter 16. A heavily industrialized version of Trent Reznor's Closer was playing by the time I grabbed a bar stool and barked at the bartender's back that I needed a shot of top-shelf whiskey and make it fast. I want to feel you from the inside. Due to recent experience, I had a far greater understanding of the darker half of the Fey race than I'd ever wanted. I knew the emptiness that drove them. I'd been food for their bottomless hunger. Chester's was full of the Unseelie King's abominations, and humans were welcoming them, competing to get noticed by them, willing to let them feel them from the inside, if that was what it took to get their fix, seduced by the promise of heightened strength and senses and the temptation of immortality. I'd never understood why anyone would want to live forever. It had always seemed to me that death lent life a certain poignancy, a necessary tension. Maybe 2 billion of us needed to die, I muttered. I was in a foul mood.
I'll take one, too.
Danny hoisted herself onto a stool beside me.
Nice try.
You ever gonna let me grow up, or are you gonna be like everybody else?
I looked at her, then amended my original order to 2 shots of Macallan, 100 proof. Daddy had done the same thing to me at her age. Tough love. Shot glasses clinked on the polished chrome bar, accompanied by a deep,
"Hey, beautiful girl."
My gaze jerked to the bartender, and I did a double take. It was the dreamy-eyed boy that I'd first met while scouring a museum for oops, and had later been surprised to find working with Christian at Trinity College's ALD, the Ancient Languages Department. My first impulse was pleasure that he'd survived. It was squelched by suspicion. Coincidences make me nervous. Small world, I said coolly.
Big enough.
He flashed an easy smile.
Most of the time.
New job?
City changes. Jobs, too. You?
Unemployed. Nobody buying books. They were all out hunting one.
Different look. Going dark, beautiful girl.
I touched my hair.
More than the dew.
Enough to survive.
Hard to say when enough's enough.
Look who's working where.
Look who's drinking where.
I can handle myself. You?
Always.
He gave me another of those smiles and moved down the bar, tossing glasses, pouring high, fast, and flashy. Beside me, Danny choked, spit, wheezed, and began to cough uncontrollably. When I patted her back, she jerked away and skewered me with a glare.
What are you trying to do? Kill me?
She squeaked when she could speak.
That's petrol. Who would want to drink that?
I laughed. You develop a taste for it.
I think I might have been born with all the tastes I need.
She pilfered a handful of cherries from across the bar, crammed them in her mouth, and hopped down from her stool.
Grown-ups are weird, she said darkly.
Where do you think you're going?
Take a look around.
I didn't like the idea and told her so.
Come on, Mac. I'm super fast and super strong. Nobody can touch me. I'm the one should be worried about leaving you alone, slowpoke.
Put that way, she had a point.
Give me room to breathe, Mac.
She was fidgeting from foot to foot, and the look in her eyes said she was about to whiz off whether I said okay or not. I had a sudden, unwanted understanding of Rowena. How do you mother a kid who's faster than you, stronger than you, and quite possibly smarter?
Don't go far, and not for long, deal?
Deal. And be careful.
Wind ruffled my hair. She was already gone.
Who's the kid?
The dreamy-eyed boy was back. A shot clinked to the chrome counter. I tossed it back, grimaced, gasped. Fire exploded in my gut.
Friend.
Good to have, in times like these.
How'd you find this place?
Same way as you, I imagine.
Doubt it.
Ever find Christian?
He was referring to the day I'd called the ALD dozens of times, hunting for the young Scott. I'd been worried sick because Barons had voiced me into revealing that the Keltars were spying on him, and I was afraid Barons was going to hunt Christian down and hurt him. Yes. I didn't see any point in telling him I'd lost him again, perhaps permanently.
Seen him lately?
No, you?
No. I'd like to.
Why? Suspicion was me.
Friends. Good to have in times like these.
What do you think of this place? Why was he here? Another pretty boy in search of immortality?
Life and death, beautiful girl. Been about it since the beginning. Will be till the end.
What's your poison? You want to live forever too?
I'd take some peace and quiet. Beautiful girl.
He laughed.
A good book.
Man after my own heart. I love a good book, too. In the mirror above the bar, something caught my eye. I tensed. In a booth behind me, the gray woman was holding hands with the well-muscled, gorgeous waiter who'd earlier been flirting with the utter thing. I could see both what she was and what she was making him see. To him, she was a fey princess, inhumanly beautiful, mind-numbingly sexual, gazing at him with rapt adoration. Only I could see the open, oozing lesions with which she caressed him, with which she was sucking his life away, leaving rotting teeth, rheumy eyes, parchment-thin gray skin. She was making short work of him. He wouldn't last the hour. My hand went to the shoulder holster beneath my coat.
Watch yourself, beautiful girl,
the dreamy-eyed boy said softly. I tore my gaze away from the mirror and stared at him. He was eyeing my coat, watching my hand move beneath it. He couldn't possibly know what I was reaching for. What are you talking about? He looked behind me.
They are here, and... well, you'll figure it out.
Big hands bit down on my shoulders. There were two men behind me. I could feel them. Big, electric, powerful men.
Pull that thing out.
A man growled.
We'll take it from you and never give it back. First rule of house. This is neutral ground. Second rule of house. Break a rule. You die.
Get your hands off me, I gritted.
We have the kid. You want to see her again. Get up.
My eyes narrowed.
How had they gotten Danny? There's no way you...
We're faster.
Like barons? There was no answer. Well, I'd found my 8, or at least 2 of them, and they had Danny. Sighing, I stood and glared up at the gray woman in the mirror, but she didn't notice, too busy serving herself off her waiter's well-muscled platter. My blood boiled. He was no longer remotely good-looking. Barons had told me the gray man rarely took so much that his victims died. Apparently the gray woman had larger appetites. I revised my estimate. He had another 10 minutes at most. The dreamy-eyed boy was reflected in the mirror below them. I stared. He didn't look the same in the mirror. He was blurred around the edges and... wrong. Very wrong. I shivered, struck by a soul-deep chill. I tried to bring his reflection into focus. The harder I tried, the blurrier he became. The blurred shape cleared, gave me a sharp look.
Don't talk to it, beautiful girl. Never talk to it.
I gaped. Her, you mean? The gray woman?
It.
He spat the word with such revulsion that I flinched. I looked down from the mirror at the real thing, not the reflection, and suddenly I could breathe again. He was a boy. A handsome, dreamy-eyed boy. Not something I wanted to run screaming from. What it? He stared at me blankly.
I didn't say anything.
Now.
The man behind me growled impatiently.
Move.
They escorted me up a wide chrome staircase to the top floor of Chester's, behind a chrome balustrade. Dark glass walls lined the entire circumference of the upper floor, smooth, without doors or handles. I glanced from one of my escorts to the other. They hadn't spoken a word since they'd closed their hands around my upper arms and begun steering me through the crowd. Nor had I. I could feel what they were made of. Leashed violence. Both looked to be in their early 30s, heavily muscled. The man on my left had hands that were badly scarred. They were massive men. There was something about their eyes that made me decide keeping my mouth shut until I had a better understanding of my situation was the wisest course of action. I glanced down as we topped the open tread stairs. The waiter was on the floor, dead. The gray woman was already looking around for a new toy. My hands fisted. We walked along the wall of darkened glass until an indefinable characteristic in the featureless surface must have indicated a door, because the man on my right placed his palm to the glass. A panel slid aside, revealing a large room constructed entirely of two-way glass, cornered by metal girders. You could see everything going on outside it. The perimeter of the ceiling was lined with small screens, fed by countless security cameras. Here were the guts of the club. Nothing happened anywhere in Chester's that wasn't seen here.
Broader, like you said, Rye.
They pushed me inside. The panel slid closed behind me with a soft hiss. The room was dark, but for the glow of LCD panels. I took a step to catch my balance. For a moment, I thought I was falling, but it was an illusion created by the floor, which was also made of two-way glass. It was so dim in the room that all I could see were outlines, a desk, a few chairs, a table, and a man standing across the room, his back to me. Everything beneath the room, however, was clearly visible. It made each step feel like a leap of faith. Glass houses, huh, Riordan? The first time I'd ever called IYCGM on my cell phone, Riordan had berated me. Told me people who lived in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, implying my goals were no loftier than barons. Now here he stood, surveying his world from inside one. Did he consider his own goals so pristine? I narrowed my eyes. There was another room beyond the one in which we stood, even darker. Whatever lurked in its shadows, he was watching it intently. After a moment, he said, without turning,
"Why did you come, Mac?"
"Why are you feeding humans to the Unseelie?"
"There is no force at my club.
Only desire. Mutual.
They don't understand what they're doing.
Not my problem.
They're dying. Somebody needs to wake them up to reality.
They're in love with dying.
They're misguided, confused.
Not my problem.
You could do something about it.
So I should,
he said.
Does that seem a friendly crowd down there to you? It trembles on the verge of another riot, yet you would have me play moral advisor. Men have been crucified for less. I've seen enough train wrecks to know when the rails are locked and the brakes have failed. It's all train wrecks down there, Mac. Only one thing holds my interest now. Potential. Behrens thinks you have it.
His tone made it plain. But you don't, I said flatly.
You worry me.
You worry me, too. I took a few more steps into the room. I wanted a better look at him. I wanted to know what he was watching. Like Behrens and my escorts, Riordan was tall, well-built. I wondered if it was a requirement to be whatever they were. No wimps allowed. He wore dark pants and a crisp white shirt, sleeves rolled up on thickly muscled forearms. A silver cuff, identical to Behrens, glinted on his wrist.
Everyone seems to think you're the solution, don't they?
He said. I shrugged. Not everybody. Rowena didn't.
Has it occurred to you that you might be the problem?
What do you mean?
Why do you think you keep having so many brushes with the book when everyone else who's searching for it never gets a glimpse of it? Even Derrock, your illustrious master, can't get close to it. Word is, it's been taking its own, unseelie, chewing them up and spitting them out. But nobody who really wants it can find it, except you.
I'm an oop detector, I reminded him. I'm the only one who can sense it. There's potential for you.
Indeed. Potential for what? Has it occurred to you that perhaps you don't keep finding the book? It keeps finding you.
What are you saying?
What do you think the book wants, Mac?
How should I know? Death? Destruction? Chaos? Same as the rest of the Unseelie.
What would you want if you were a book?
I'm different, and that's easy. I'd want to not be a book.
Maybe you're not so different. Maybe it wants also to not be a book.
It has other forms. It's the beast, too.
Has the beast ever harmed anyone? Don't you think it would if it could? Isn't that its nature?
I studied his back, pondered his words. You're saying the beast is only glamour, that like any fae, it creates illusion.
What if its only true form is a book? One that can't walk or talk or move or do anything on its own?
Are you saying you think it takes people over just to have a body? He glanced up at the LCD screens above his head.
I don't know what I think. I consider everything. You watch them long enough, you see what they want. Unseelie hunger, like starved prisoners for whatever it is the Unseelie King brought them into existence lacking. What if the book is after corporeality? A movable form it can use with autonomy, a body it can keep and control, a life of its own.
Then why would it kill the people it takes?
Maybe it doesn't. Maybe like dolls, they break. Or maybe some part of them manages to regain control for a few moments and stop what the book is doing to them the only way they can. Or maybe it's biding time, waiting for just the right moment. Maybe it has the fey ability of prognosticating possibles, delicately shaping events to achieve certain ends. Has the book ever spoken to you?
Yes.
Behren said it called you by name.
I'd never told him that. He must have heard it speak to me that night. I'd thought it spoke only in my head. So? I don't know how it knew my name. He liked the maybe game. I could play it, too. Maybe it knows everybody's. I don't know what you're getting at, but the book repels me. I can barely get close to it. I'm too good, and it's too evil.
Really?
He could not have said it more dryly. What do you mean, really? I said defensively.
Good and evil are merely opposite sides of a coin, Mac. Get tossed in the air enough, it's easy to come down on the wrong side. Maybe the book knows something about you that makes you different. Makes it want you. Makes it think if you flipped sides, you'd be worth more to it than any of the rest of us.
What he was saying didn't make sense, and it was creeping me out. Like what? And if that was the case, then why wouldn't it have taken me already? It's had plenty of chances.
Darok bided his time, waiting for the perfect moment. Maybe you're not primed to flip yet. Eternal life breeds eternal patience. If you lived long enough, you might feel that if today amuses, today is good. All sense of right or wrong, all morality, all value might cease to exist.
With the exception of two compartments to hold everything, stasis and change, the classic Fey attitude. Of course, immortality would do that. So you think the book is amusing itself, waiting for the right moment to pounce, wake up? There's never going to be a right moment for it to pounce on me.
Arrogance, like anger, is often a fatal flaw.
Darok lost me. He didn't get what he wanted. I'm still standing, and I'm still fighting, and I will never flip sides, I said coldly.
You're still standing because of that one, Mac.
He nodded at the room he was staring into.
Don't forget it. Never seen anything like her. And I've seen a lot.
I moved to stand beside him, peered into the room. Up close I could discern shapes. Danny was in the middle of four men, spinning ceaselessly, sword up, snarling. You hurt her, I'll kill you, I told him. No matter that he was a foot taller than me and twice my mass.
She said the same about you.
Suddenly Danny went into hyperspeed. Then they all disappeared. And then there was Danny again, surrounded by four men.
She hasn't stopped trying to get out since I put her in there. I wonder how long she could survive.
Not very long without food, but I wasn't about to tell him that. I looked up at him. He turned his face to mine, looked down. Handsome, chilling man. His eyes were the clearest I'd ever seen. This was a man that suffered no conflicts with himself. He had no problems being what he was. We stared at each other.
Black looks good on you,
he murmured.
Has Baron seen you like this?
Eternal patience, I murmured back. His tie was loosened, and in the open collar of his white shirt, his neck was a skein of scars, with a long, wicked-looking one stretching up the left side from shoulder to ear. I didn't need a nurse to tell me he'd healed from a wound, long ago, that would have killed most men. How long ago? Does today amuse Riordan? His lips curved. He looked back at Danny and, after a moment, nodded.
It does. More than it has in recent years.
She's 13.
Time will remedy that.
You worry me, Riordan.
Back at you. Bit of advice, Mac. Life's an ocean full of waves. All are dangerous. All can drown you. Under the right circumstances, even the gentlest swell can turn tidal. Hopping waves is for the weekend warrior. Choose one. Ride it out. It increases your odds of survival.
He watched Danny for a moment, then said,
There are rules in my house.
Your buddy's already told me the first two. Neutral ground. Break a rule, you die.
No killing Fey inside my club. In my walls means under my protection.
I just watched one of your protected fey kill a human?
If they are stupid enough to be here, they're stupid enough to die.
Does that mean I can kill humans, too? I said sweetly. There were two in particular who had just caught my eye. Derek O'Banion, the younger brother of the Irish mobster I'd killed after I stole the Spear of Destiny from him, and current right-hand man to the Lord Master, was crossing the dance floor beneath my feet. Accompanying him was Fiona, the woman who used to run Barron's Books and Baubles, until she tried to kill me. Then Barron's had fired her. Now I just needed the L.M. himself and a few unseelie princes to have all my enemies in the same place.
Special rules for you, Mac. You don't get to kill anything in my club, fey or human. Your fight is outside these walls. And if Barron's belief in you is unfounded, there won't be any place you can hide. Every last one of us will come after you.
I didn't dignify his threat with a response. He knocked on the glass and made a gesture with his left hand. Three of the men disappeared. Danny blinked out. Then suddenly there she was again, and one of his men had her sword pointed at her throat.
If you ever come into my club carrying again, we'll take your weapons and never give them back. Clear?
As the floor beneath my feet. Chapter 17. I felt like the queen of standoffs, hostility and tension everywhere I turned, always venturing, never gaining. Last night, I'd realized I wasn't the only one with trust issues. None of the players on Dublin's board trusted anyone else. I'd made the mistake of assuming, since Barron's had chosen Riordan to be my backup support, that when I went to see him he would be, well, supportive. Not only wasn't he impugned my motives at the deepest level, questioning my fundamental character. He'd made it out like the book might be after me, drawn by something kindred. I was about as far from evil as the North Pole was from the South. Throwing stones my ass, I muttered. There he'd stood in his glass house, letting Unseelie prey on humans, and he accused me of having moral issues. I was in a horrible mood. Danny and I had pretty much slunk back to our house after getting tossed out of Chester's by four of Riordan's men. Danny's eyes had been feverishly bright, and she'd been spitting fury, but beneath the pale-faced bravado, I'd glimpsed fear. I understood. Just when I thought I'd finally become a halfway decent power on the board, traded my pawn in for a rook or a knight, some king or queen came along to remind me how ineffectual I was. I was getting damn sick of it. I'd lie awake on the couch. Sleeping in a stranger's bed had seemed weird. Stewing. Until nearly dawn. Then I slept like the dead for a few hours and woke to feel the wind ruffling my hair as Danny paced. Zing, 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 zing. I swung my legs over the edge of the couch and sat up, eyeing the blur. Although being at the Abbey had been bad for Danny in many ways, Rowena and the girls had kept the gifted teen occupied constantly. She had too much energy, intelligence, and angst to leave to her own devices for long. When I asked her to go spy at the Abbey to find out when Rowena planned to send the girls in to scout Dublin, she looked relieved at the prospect of something to do. "Nobody'll even know I'm there," she promised, grabbing her sword and coat and slinging her backpack over a shoulder. "When do you want me back?" "Just make sure it's before dark." After she left, I contemplated the fireplace morosely. The house we were squatting in, like the rest of Dublin, except for Chester's, which I assumed was powered by an entire room of underground generators, had no electricity or gas. Not only was it dark, it was freezing, and of course it was raining outside. I tugged the comforter that I'd pilfered from the bedroom more snugly around my shoulders, and sat, teeth chattering. I'd have given my eye teeth for a cup of coffee. Where was Valaine when I needed him? I considered the pile of logs and tried to decide where the prior owner might have stashed matches. I heard the kitchen door open. "What did you forget, Danny?" I called.
A silhouette stepped into the doorway between the kitchen and living room.
I had begun to think the child would never leave,
said a deep, musical voice. I don't have Danny's hyperspeed, but I achieved something close to it. One moment I was sitting on the couch feeling sorry for myself. The next I was plastered back against the far wall, spear drawn. In that moment, I faced a harsh truth. I might have a serious hate on. I might even be stronger than I'd ever been before, but I still wasn't strong enough. I still needed allies. I still needed Baron's tattoo, and I still needed Valaine's name on my tongue, even though neither could be completely relied upon. I needed Jane and his men, and I needed the She-Seers, and I hated needing anyone.
Brought you coffee, Michaela,
said the Lord Master, stepping into the room.
I hear you like it strong and sweet, with a lot of cream.
Where'd you hear that? I was shaking. I bit my tongue hard enough to draw blood, focused on the pain and stopped shaking.
Alina. She talked about you a great deal, but she pretended you were her friend, not her sister. She hid you from me. Think about that when you remember her. Why did she conceal your existence unless she sensed from the very beginning something about me was not to be trusted? But she chose me anyway. Loved me anyway.
She didn't love you, and you're lying. You must have found her journal and read it.
And she wrote in her journal how you took your coffee. Pitiful rationale, Michaela.
You took a lucky guess. Get out of my house. I eyed my gun, which was lying on the floor next to the couch. I should have grabbed it, too, but his voice had sent me flying off the sofa, all instinct and no intellect. The only reason I had the spear was because it had been on my lap when he walked in. Although the Lord Master had once been Fae, the Seelie Queen had punished him by turning him mortal. He was now merely human, pumped up on Unseelie. Could I kill him with a gun? I was more than willing to try. I doubted he'd let me get close enough with the spear. I was surprised he'd come this close without a sifting Fae standing next to him.
Sit down and drink your coffee, and put that spear away.
He glanced at the fireplace, murmured a few words, and flames leapt from the cold logs. How did you do that? You're not Fae.
Fae isn't the only game in town. Your illustrious benefactor taught me well.
Valaine, I said.
No.
Something inside me went very still. Barons?
He taught me many things, including voice.
Kneel.
Kiss my ass.
I said.
Kneel before me now.
I sucked in a sharp breath. Layered voices resonated around the room, pushing at me, trying to invade my mind, make his will mine. It was voice as strong as Baron's had once used on me. I smiled. It was an annoyance, nothing more. It looked like I'd found that place inside me that Baron's had sent me hunting for, where I had the strength to resist voice. Too bad I still didn't understand what it was. I had no idea how to use voice, but it no longer worked on me. I was free. It was another of the things that had changed in me. One more power.
No, I said.
I took a step toward the couch and my gun.
Look out the window.
It was a warning.
Touch that gun, they sift.
I looked and jerked. Danny!
She's almost as impressive as you. If she could sense the book, I wouldn't need you. But she can't, and I do, so you and I are going to come to terms, one way or another. Sit, sheathe the spear, forget anything so stupid as shooting me, and listen.
I would never have obeyed, but beyond the window, out in that cold, rainy day, two unseelie princes were holding Danny between them. Her cheeks were running with blood, and she was shivering violently. She wasn't cold. She wasn't even getting rained on. I guessed the UPs didn't like being wet. She was shivering with heat, lust, the destroying kind. Her sword gleamed alabaster, forgotten in a muddy puddle on the dirt lawn. I knew they couldn't possibly have touched it. Somehow they'd made her throw it away, same as the LM had done to me.
I was seriously beginning to think I'd gotten the short end of the stick, that all she-seers had. What good were we, with all our limitations? We just kept getting shoved around. I pushed a chair in front of the window so I could keep a constant eye on her. I had no idea what I'd do if the princes did anything other than restrain her, as they were now, but I'd do something. They were in static form, clothed. They'd better stay that way. I was looking at two of the princes who'd turned me inside out, who'd very nearly taken my soul from me. One day I would kill them, if it was the last thing I did. I was wise enough to know today was not that day. "Talk," I said tightly. He did. I sipped my coffee. Irritatingly, it was good. While the Lord Master told me a story about being thrown out of Faerie for defying the Queen, for attempting to return their race to the old ways, when the Fae had been worshipped as the gods they were, instead of living like sheep alongside puny mortals. He told me how she'd stripped him of his Fae essence and turned him mortal, about finding himself alone in our world, human and fragile. He'd been cast naked, unarmed, and without human currency into the middle of Manhattan, in a subway station. He'd barely survived those first few minutes, had been attacked by a group of mocking, cruel humans wearing leather and chains, sporting shaved heads and hammering fists. He told me how for a time he'd been out of his mind, horrified by a body that felt pain, that needed to eat, drink, and make waste, how he'd discovered germs and been terrified of death, after so many hundreds of thousands of years of not even being able to comprehend it. He'd wandered, with no place to rest, no money or understanding of how to care for his finite, weak shape that required so many things and caused so much misery. He, a god, was reduced to scavenging through human trash for sustenance to keep his body alive. He'd had to kill to seize clothing, had to scrounge like an animal. He'd studied his new environment, determined to find a better way to survive so he could then do better than merely survive. He wanted revenge.
"You see," he said, "you and I aren't so different, are we? Both after the same thing. You, however, are misguided."
"And you aren't?" I snorted. "Give me a break." He laughed.
"Ha ha ha, perspective, Michaela. Yours is skewed."
Bit by bit, he told me, he'd clawed his way from the bottom. When he'd finally learned to satisfy his base requirements, he made a startling discovery. His new form felt more than mere need. The ennui and dispassion of immortality began to melt away. The fear of death awakened unexpected facets of his nature. Emotion stirred in him sensations that being Fae never had and never could. Madness was replaced for a time by sheer lust, but finally his head had cleared. His existence under control, he began to seek power on the human plane, pursuing his agenda. Fae knowledge and hundreds of thousands of years of existing had given him a distinct advantage. He knew where to look for the things he wanted, and how to use them when he found them. He'd discovered two of the silvers at an auction house in London, risked Cruce's terrible curse, and found his way into Unseelie, where he'd made a pact with the mercenary hunters to help him regain what was rightfully his, and had been wrongfully taken from him, his essential Fae nature. He trained with a warlock in London, from whom he stole precious copies of pages torn from the Shisadu, which he'd then traded to barons in exchange for a crash course in the Druid arts, at which Derek had excelled, gifted as he was with Fae intellect and understanding of the cosmos. "Why didn't barons just take the pages from you?"
"We pursued a common agenda for a time. He doesn't kill anyone he thinks might prove useful in the future."
Mercenary to the core. Sounded like the man I knew. "What is he?"
"Consider instead what he is not. He is not the one that hunted me down for what I did to you. Doesn't that tell you enough, Michaela? You are a tool to him. His tool works again. he is satisfied.
How did pages get torn from the Shisadu? I changed the subject swiftly. If I ignored the knife he'd just driven through my heart, maybe it would go away. He shrugged. He had no idea. They'd served their purpose. Now he needed the real thing. He'd continued collecting power wherever it could be found. The hunters taught him to eat lesser unseelie, to protect his fragile mortal existence. Why would they help you?
I promised them freedom, and I gave it to them.
He was an unseelie hero, he told me, and soon the seelie would recognize him as such, too. Yes, he had disobeyed his queen. So had many others, who'd never been punished so harshly. Had the crime he'd committed merited a death sentence? There were other seelie who felt as he did, who wanted a return to the old ways. His only crime had been trying to bring about what many of them secretly longed for. He should have been rewarded for standing up for his brethren. Even humans resisted doling out such a horrific punishment, and their blink-of-an-eye lives were so comically short, they were worthless. He'd lost eternity for a single broken rule. He wanted it back. Was that so wrong? I made a hand gesture when he paused.
I have not seen that one before,
he said. Miniature record player, playing My Heart Bleeds for You. I should care about this, why? You made me pariah. I narrowed my eyes, studying him. Had he been the fourth? Had this monster touched me?
You made you pariah. I gave you other options. You refused them.
Do you really think the unseelie will continue to obey you now that they're no longer imprisoned?
I freed them. I am their king now.
So what's keeping one of them from killing you and going after the book himself?
They're too drunk on freedom to see beyond the moment. They feast, they fuck, they don't think.
You never know. One of them might snap out of it. Rulers get toppled all the time. Look at what you were trying to do to your queen.
I have Cruce's amulet. They fear it.
How long do you expect that to last? You're not even Fae.
I will be again as soon as I get the book.
Assuming one of them doesn't kill you first. He waved a dismissive hand.
The unseelie do not wish to rule. After an eternity in hell, they wish only to be freed to indulge their hungers.
His face went hard and cold as marble.
But I will not explain my race to a mere human.
At that moment, I could clearly see the icy, imperious Fae he'd once been, and would be again, given half a chance. He claimed to have been changed by his experience with mortality. If indeed he had, and there was plenty of doubt in my mind on that score, I could too easily see him changing back in a heartbeat. You're pretty mere yourself right now, bud, cannibalizing your own race. I've heard the Seelie Court has a special horrific punishment for that.
Then you'd better hope they don't find out about you, Makayla,
he said coolly. We stared at each other a long moment. Then he tossed his long hair and flashed me a smile meant to charm. In another time and place, had I not known who and what he was, it probably would have worked. He was a beautiful, cultured, powerful man, and the jagged scar on his face made him all the more intriguing. I imagine Alina must have found him utterly fascinating when they'd first met. There wasn't anything remotely like him in Ashford, Georgia. As if he'd somehow picked up on my thoughts of her, he said,
I came to Dublin because I learned the Shisadu had been sighted in the city. That was when I met your sister.
I went still inside. I wanted to hear about Alina, even if it came from him. I was starved to know about my sister's last days. How did you meet? He'd walked into a pub where she was sitting with friends. She looked up, and he felt as if everyone else in the bar had melted away, just vanished into the background, leaving only him and her. She'd later told him she felt the same thing. They'd spent the afternoon together, and the night, and the next, and the next. They'd been inseparable. He discovered she wasn't like other humans, that she too was struggling with a new state of being she didn't understand and had no idea how to handle. They learned together. He'd found an ally in his quest for the book, in his quest to restore his fey nature. They'd been fated for each other.
You lied to her. You pretended you were a she-seer, I accused. She'd never have helped you otherwise.
So you say. I think she might have. But she was skittish, and I was unwilling to take chances. She made me feel things I did not understand. I made her feel things she'd longed for all her life. I set her free. The way she laughed.
He paused, and a faint smile curved his mouth.
When she laughed, people would turn to stare. It was so... Humans have a word for it. Joy. Your sister knew it.
I hated him for having heard her laugh, for knowing she knew joy, for ever having touched her. This monster who'd arranged to have me raped, body and soul, and my eyes must have burned with it, because his smile faded.
I told you the truth. I did not kill her, which means someone else walking around out there did. You are so certain I'm the villain. What if your real villain is closer to you than you think?
I'm going to bottom line this again. You made me pariah, I spat, then fished.
You set 4 Unseelie princes on me?
3.
I stared. I knew there'd been a 4th.
You were the 4th.
That would have served no purpose. I am not fey at the moment.
Then who was the 4th? My hands fisted in my lap. Being raped was bad enough. Being raped and not knowing if your 4th rapist was someone you knew was even worse.
There was no 4th.
Not believing a word you say.
The 4th Unseelie prince was killed hundreds of thousands of years ago in battle between the queen and king. That child.
He shot a glance out the window.
Killed another when I tried to reclaim you at the abbey.
A memory from my fractured state of consciousness surfaced sharply. Lying on the cold stone floor, believing salvation was at hand. A flame-haired warrior. A sword. I remembered. It was a shameful memory. I'd wanted to kill Danny for killing my master. And I was still mad at Danny for killing the prince, but for an entirely different reason. I wanted to be the one to kill the bastards.
The princes want revenge. They want me to let them have her. They are mine to command.
I stared at him, not missing the threat, but still trying to digest that there was no 4th prince. How could the L.M. not have known a 4th was there? Was there a 4th, or had I imagined it?
What has Barons tried to make of you, Michaela? And Valaine? A tool for their purposes. They are no different than me. My methods have merely been more direct, and more directly effective. Everyone is trying to use you.
He glanced out the window.
If not for her interference, I would have succeeded. I would have had the Shisadu by now and been back in Faerie.
Leaving our world a complete mess?
What do you think Barons would do, or Valaine?
At least try to put the walls back up.
You're so certain?
You're just trying to make me doubt everyone.
If you obtain the Shisadu for me, Michaela, I will reclaim the Unseelie and restore order to your world.
Not a word in there about restoring the walls. And give me my sister back, I said dryly.
If you wish, or you may come visit us in Faerie.
Not funny.
I did not intend it to be. Whether you wish to believe it or not, she mattered to me.
I saw her body, you bastard.
His lids half dropped, his mouth tightened.
As did I. It was not done by me or at my direction.
She told me you were coming for her, that she was afraid you wouldn't let her out of the country. She wanted to come home.
His lids lifted. He looked startled. On a human face, I would have called his expression pained.
She said that.
She was crying on the phone, hiding from you.
No.
He shook his head.
Not from me, Michaela. I do not believe she thought it was me. She knew me better than that. Yes, she'd found me out, discovered what I was, but she didn't fear me.
Stop lying to me! I lunged to my feet. He'd killed her. I had to believe that. In the huge sea of unknowns that had become my existence, there was one certainty, and it was my life raft. The Lord Master was the bad guy. He'd killed Alina. That was my absolute, my unwavering truth. I couldn't let go of it. I couldn't survive in a state of complete paranoia. He reached into his coat, took out a photo album, and tossed it on the couch.
I expect you to give this back to me. It is mine. I came in peace today,
he said,
and offered you one more chance at an alternative to war between us. The last time you refused me, you saw what I did. 3 days, Michaela. I will come for you in 3 days. Be ready, be willing.
He glanced out the window. He reached into his coat again, and this time pulled out the amulet on its thick gold chain. It glowed at his touch. He looked at it for a moment, then at me, as if debating testing it. I was a she-seer, and a null, impervious to fey magic. Would it work on me? Expect the unexpected, I reminded myself. I could make no assumptions.
I will let you keep the child today. She is a gift from me to you. I can give you many, many gifts. The next price I called you will not be, as you say, refundable.
He rapped sharply on the window and nodded. The princes were gone. Danny slumped into a puddle of mud. The L.M. vanished.
They made me throw away my sword, Mac, Danny said, teeth chattering.
I dabbed gently at the blood on her cheeks. I know, honey. You told me. 7 times in the past 3 minutes. It was all she'd said since I helped her up from the puddle, dug out a metal teapot, opened 2 bottles of water, heated it over the fire the L.M. had left burning, and began cleaning her up.
"Dunno how you survived," she said, and began to cry.
I wiped at her cheeks some more, pushed at her hair, fretted and fussed like my mom and Alina had fretted over me whenever I wept. She didn't cry pretty. She cried like a storm breaking loose, a storm that had been brewing for a long time. I suspected she was crying for things I knew nothing about and might never know. Danny was an intensely private person. She cried like her heart was breaking, like her soul was in those tears, and I held her, thinking how strange life was. I'd thought I was fully engaged in life back in Ashford, Georgia, 100% invested. I'd had no idea what life or love was. Life didn't explode in the sunshine and pretty places. Life took the strongest root, with a little bit of rain and a whole lot of shit for fertilizer. Although love could grow in times of peace, it tempered in battle. Daddy told me once, when I'd said something about how perfect his relationship with Mom was, that I should have seen the first 5 years of their marriage, that they'd fought like hellions, crashed into each other like 2 giant stones, that eventually they'd eroded each other into the perfect fit, become a single wall, nestled into each other's curves and hollows, her strengths chinking his weaknesses, her weaknesses reinforced by his strengths. I began telling Danny about my parents, about what life had been like growing up in a happy home in the Deep South, about magnolia-scented days and sultry heat, slow paddling fans and pool parties. She stilled in my arms. After a while, she stopped crying and leaned back on the couch, staring at me like a stray cat with its nose pressed to the window of a restaurant. When she took off for the Abbey, I carefully tucked the photo album the L.M. had tossed on the couch into my backpack, unopened. I knew without cracking the cover I was going to need time to pore over the pictures, a luxury I didn't have now. I headed off into the gray drizzly day
for Barons, Books, and Baubles. Chapter 18. I detoured past Chester's on the way there, hoping the Gray Woman might be in the vicinity. I was going to spend a lot of time loitering in the streets outside Riordan's club. Inside his club might be under his protection, but that didn't mean the surrounding area wasn't free range. I walked quietly, tensed for battle, prepared to slam my palms into the hag, null and stab her and do a victory dance on her gruesome body. But the only Uncelia I encountered on the way to the bookstore were Rhino Boys, half a dozen of them. And what they were doing confounded me so thoroughly that I ended up walking down the cobbled street, spear sheathed, hands in pockets, staring at them while they stared at me. I think we all had big what-the-fucks plastered all over our faces. It's kind of hard to tell with those beady eyes and tusks, but I know I did. They were rewiring the street lamps and carefully resetting them in the sidewalks. They were sweeping up debris. They were replacing bulbs. They had brooms and jackhammers, wiring materials, wheelbarrows, and concrete. I was supposed to kill them. That was what I did, what I was made for. But they were putting Dublin back to rights. I wanted Dublin back to rights. Did this mean they were working to restore the power, too?
"Are you doing it to keep the Shades out?"
I shook my head at the oddity of having just initiated a conversation with a Rhino Boy. I would have wondered if my day could get any stranger, but my days always get stranger.
"Pigs!"
one of them grunted, and the rest of them agreed, snorting.